It's been more than a year since Edward Snowden leaked information about NSA surveillance programs. That event has raised constitutional questions and technological questions about the conduct of U.S. government electronic espionage, questions of whether the law can ever keep up with communications technology, and whether the government can ever resist the temptation to use its technical capabilities that it acquires without establishing proper oversight. Now that legislation is working its way through Congress to regulate the NSA, a presidential directive to end certain NSA programs has come to pass, two Pulitzer Prizes for news organizations that publish the Snowden documents, do the feds want to make a deal? There are reports of a channel of communications between federal prosecutors and Snowden's representatives. Discussions are said to have been underway for weeks. If anyone is in on those discussions, it's Snowden's principal legal advisor, Ben Wisner, from the ACLU. He told me he couldn't comment in any way on reports of any ongoing discussions, but I did ask him, could Snowden come in from the cold?
He will be back in the United States. He will not be back in the United States to face a trial under this regime. He'll be back in the United States when this administration or the next understands that the idea of locking away someone who launched a historic global debate is absurd. And will be, you know, viewed with astonishment and derision by the rest of the world. I really do think that Snowden is one of these characters who bent history. In general, history is kind to whistleblowers. History is much less kind to overbroad claims of national security. Dan Ellsberg walks around with a halo around his head right now, but what was said about him in 1971 made the criticism of Snowden seem like child play. He was getting his orders from the Soviet embassy. He was a traitor. The information that he released was going to cause grave and irreversible damage to national security. The playbook is the same. I really do think that Snowden is, and Ellsberg agrees, a far more consequential whistleblower than Ellsberg was. And so in time, I think the negative views of him are going to go away. Now, whether that means that in the near future there's a prospect of his returning to the United States, I really can't say. I hope you can get the Attorney General in this chair for the next conversation.
I sat down with Ben Wisner, legal counsel to Edward Snowden, at an event at the Core Club in Midtown Manhattan last night. And Wisner says that whether Snowden remains a fugitive in Russia or not, under current law, the government's case against him on one level is open and shut.
The only thing the government needs to show to lock Snowden away for life incommunicado is that he knew that the information that he disclosed to journalists was classified and that he did it willfully. Everything else is completely irrelevant and inadmissible in a trial. There is no public interest defense. The government doesn't have to show that the information was properly classified. And that's why Edward Snowden believed, and I believe, that the smart move for him, if he wanted to contribute to this public debate, was to go not to a lawyer's office, but to an airport. And why the first time that he was able to actually speak to a lawyer was after he was, you know, already in the soup with a legal noose around his neck. So no, it doesn't complicate his legal case. It complicates his public case. But there'd be no public case at all if he hadn't done that, because on day one, he would have been put in a solitary confinement cell, and he would have been subjected to special administrative measures. He would not have been allowed to speak to the press. This isn't speculation. This is fact. Chelsea Manning, who was already convicted, is categorically prohibited from speaking to any reporter, from even sending a letter to a reporter, by the kinds of rules here. And what Edward Snowden knows dwarfs what she knows in terms of classified information.
Is it the case then, and based on your conversations with Edward Snowden, I wonder if this has come up, does he believe that the WikiLeaks Julian Assange approach to a much more discretionary method of leaking is invalid, and that he's basically sort of upgrading the quality, the veracity, the sort of intent of what he's doing versus WikiLeaks?
I would make two points about that. I think that sometimes what WikiLeaks did gets caricatured, because remember that WikiLeaks also worked with Der Spiegel, the New York Times, and The Guardian in a process to decide what would be published based on that log. So I think they later repudiated their own agreements with those organizations and decided that they didn't want to participate in a process that would involve that kind of vetting and the amount of redactions. But I don't need to tell you about my discussions with Snowden. I think you can observe his actions. He made a very clear decision that he was going to use a different model. And his model was going to allow journalists to lead rather than have him lead. He wants journalists to decide again, using the processes that I outline, what's in the public interest, what the public should know or not know. He has said very candidly in some interviews, including with Time magazine, that he doesn't always agree with the decisions that these journalists are making on both sides. I think he's frustrated with how slow some of the journalism has been, and he's been frustrated by some of the articles the journalists chose to publish because what he thought he was providing for context they thought was the story. But he is comfortable with the process that he set up. It is a different one than the one that WikiLeaks now advocates. It is not to just put out massive amounts of information and, you know, sort of let the world process it and digest it how they will. It is for journalists to lead and make these decisions.
What do you think the principal constitutional issues are that so outraged Edward Snowden in the kinds of leaks that we've learned about over the last, the kinds of information we've gotten about programs at the NSA over the last year?
Well, here I think there's a very simple answer to this. You know, he believes, and I believe, that the Constitution essentially requires government surveillance to be targeted. It requires the suspicion to come first and the search to come second. And because the NSA's and not just the NSA's, but many governments' capabilities have grown so quickly, they've essentially flipped that around. Because they can now collect and store everything, they have come up with a legal regime that permits them to do that. So now they are arguing in cases in which we're litigating against them that the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution has nothing to say about the NSA intercepting and storing and as many communications of ours as it wants, as long as it just leaves it there in a box, in a digital box. The Constitution only potentially comes into play when a human being then queries that database in search of a particular, you know, subject or person. What NSA is doing in order to facilitate the mass collection of information that it does is that it's a laboratory for vulnerabilities. So it is both, you know, trying to undermine encryption systems that are widely used. It is trying to physically hack into these kinds of systems. It is installing malware and sending it over the open internet. So once you've done that, you have opened it up to China. You've opened it up to criminal hackers in Russia who are trying to get your credit card numbers. And that's why, I mean, technologists understand this. There is actually a conflict between surveillance and online security.
So we cannot have both. So we could just as easily be talking about Edward Snowden, the Chinese agent. I mean, if somebody infiltrated NSA who wanted to get access to this hardware, instead of leaks raising constitutional questions, it's perfectly possible that every bit of communications would be easily observed by a foreign power.
Well, and I think that is, you know, Keith Alexander, who ran the NSA until a few weeks ago, said that was his biggest fear. Because he knew so much about his own capabilities, he was terrified that China and other countries were up on our systems in the same way.
You raised something that's really, really interesting to me. Here we have the most hopefully vigilant and paranoid security experts in the world at the NSA trying to protect the United States. And they come to a crossroads technologically where they realize that they have a capability that they can install in hardware that will give them almost unlimited surveillance capability, but they also realize that that capability opens the door, essentially leaves unpadlocked the entire communications system of this country they're trying to protect. Is there any evidence that there were conversations at a high level in the government that people went, well, this might not be a great idea?
I don't know about evidence, but I know those conversations are taking place because the Department of Defense is also charged with cyber defense. And I have heard our national security officials testify to Congress that they believe that cybersecurity threats are a greater threat to the United States than terrorism. And I actually think many of them believe that. And if they believe that, then they are living with this tension that you just described, which is the tension between any intelligence agency's, you know, need and desire to accumulate as much information as it can, and their real fear that in doing so, they're facilitating other people doing that. So one way to think about it is, who benefits more from a regime that prioritizes offense, and who benefits more from a regime that prioritizes defense? What Edward Snowden has said, and I agree with him, is that the United States has the most to lose. Our intellectual property, our resources are worth more than other people's. And actually, Richard Clark, who was President Bush's terrorism advisor, testified in Congress last month, and he said the same thing. He said, it is more important that we protect our information from China than that we steal theirs. And that there is a tension between those two missions, and that we should be deploying more resources into cyber defense, even at the cost of our own offensive surveillance capabilities.
Speaking last night at the Core Club in Midtown Manhattan, Ben Wisner is the director of the ACLU's Speech, Privacy, and Technology Project. He's principal legal advisor to Edward Snowden.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.